Hello, and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into creating their work. I'm your host, Matt Kuhlman, and our guest this episode is Piotr Parda. Piotr earned an MFA from the Academy of Fine Arts in Poznan, Poland in 2000, and a second MFA from the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston in 2004. Piotr's highly experimental methods of working result in a constant stream of small paintings and assemblages using common daily objects. These small efforts sometimes lead to larger, more refined installations, and other times simply become part of the tapestry of creative experiments that permeates his space and life. Join me as he discusses his creative processes and how his ideas come to be manifest in such a wide variety of ways. Hi Piotr, how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Thanks for being here. So we're here to talk a little bit about your work, and I have to say that out of all the artists that I've talked to, your work is perhaps the most disparate, and that you do a lot of different things and a lot of different methods, and so there's a lot that I'd like to learn about the ideas behind each piece that you're making, because they all seem so different. So I guess just to start out with, how would you define what you do as an artist? Like, what would you say your medium or method is?
After this question, usually a long and awkward silence happens whenever I'm going to a dinner or to an event. The one question I fear people will ask is, what kind of art do you do?
Mm-hmm.
It became this kind of a question that is I'm trying to avoid as much as possible. I always wanted to be a painter, and I still think I'm a painter, but since the very beginning, I was sort of kept away from it. When I was 12,
mm-hmm.
My dad signed me up for art classes, after school program art classes, and I really hoped that it's going to be painting. But for some reason, he signed me up for wood, for lino cut
mm-hmm.
printing class. I was a little puzzled. I think he thought that painting might be a little too girly for a boy or something like that. So
yeah.
He signed me up for something more.
Some with some tools and sharp objects.
Something that involves more resistance. And I actually grew to like lino cut. It was a really big twist from what I wanted to do. Painting and drawing was very direct in a way that when you make a line in drawing, it's just going to be a black line on white paper mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Here it was all inversed. The line is white.
Yeah.
So just this kind of interesting twist happened and actually stimulated me a little bit more than just going with what's obvious and predictable. And then since then, this the love of painting, of course, was still there. But I painted in high school. I went to art high school.
Mm-hmm.
And those high schools in Poland that are oriented, that are art oriented. So there I painted the most. So I did countless number of self portraits, still lifes, and landscapes. So I went painting landscapes pretty much every day when it was nice out. I painted all the time, pretty much. So
mm-hmm.
when I painted every day, my parents would say, "Well, you're painting again? You painted yesterday. It's not enough." then, of course, the natural consequence of being so in love with painting was that I have to go to college, and it has to be painting class, of course. And now I'm going to be a painter, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some circumstances that prevented me from taking painting classes. Mostly it was the myth that there's too many candidates for painting classes,
mm-hmm.
and it's very likely that I would be not admitted to college. So it's much safer to go for sculpture or printmaking and
yeah, stuff that everyone wants to do.
Here I go again, printmaking. I like printmaking, but I really wanted to go painting. But sculpting was another thing that I liked, and I've been sculpting alongside of painting too in high school. The high school actually was wood carving in school,
mm-hmm.
where I learned how to carve wood sculptures and make pieces of furniture out of wood and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
So like traditional woodworking to make
yes.
functional
and
items?
Yes, and the sculptures that they taught us was, the sculpture was mostly folk-oriented.
Uh-huh.
In the region, where the area where the school was a very known Zakopane. It's in Poland, it's a very famous tourist attraction
hmm.
where the folk art is revered, and the school has a very strong tradition of folk art. So
what kind of folk art objects would they have you make?
It was just like the figure of a Highlander with the hat, and just the there's a certain selection of motifs, like a flower motifs that are known for that part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought sculpture, I think I can do well with sculpture, and maybe then I can transfer to painting. So I passed pretty well, the exam went pretty well. I ended up in a sculpture class the first year. And also the sculpture club, the first year of studies was also for us a way to experiment with different departments. So we had many mandatory classes. One of them was painting, so I did have some painting there. But problem with college was that it was the first time when I had to sort of be on my own, and I had little allowance from my parents, and I had to really be watchful about spending
mm.
money. And the thing about painting is that it's like a monster. It's you have to buy the paints all the time.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't keep up with the spending. So the brilliant solution to that was to limit spending and enroll to conceptual classes. So
okay.
The second year of college, I drifted probably the furthest away from painting
mm-hmm.
as I could. Of course, I painted as a hobbyist. And I was going sometimes on the weekends to paint some landscape or two.
Mm.
But conceptual classes were perfect for a poor student
yeah.
who cannot squeeze.
Don't have to pay for ideas.
So you do have ideas, and you still have to get your own materials to make the ideas happen, but very often materials were very minimalistic, or you could find them in a scrap metal yard or in a garbage, or of course also you could use existing materials, because many things. One thing about conceptual art is that you redefine the existing materials, the existing things that you look at every day, and it seems to work pretty well for me. The classes were because it was conceptual art, we were required to show up every week, but we were not required to show something every week. So it was one person showing work per week. So
mm-hmm.
we had 9 people in the classroom. Someone would show work every week. So some people also had allowance to were allowed to not not show their work if they had some kind of were in the root, like they were in the creative crisis. Many people capitalized on that and just slacked the whole semester because they are artists. So there's if you look at the artists, I mean, professional artists very often they would make a work that matters to them every 6 months or even every year.
Mm.
But the one thing that really I really appreciate in the experience of conceptual art classes is that it again diverted me from what was obvious, and actually it created this kind of mechanism in my mind that made me escape from the obvious and made me question. Actually, it made me know less about what I'm supposed to do as an artist, or even it made me a little unsure whether I am an artist or whether I'm not going to be an artist tomorrow. Because as long as I'm doing something, I'm an artist. But I learned that the difference between doing some, between not doing something and doing something is just this microsecond where one time you sit and the next second you're up, and that's where you start doing something. This is
mm-hmm.
this is the fine line of between not doing something and doing something. And of course, the way you do it and the amount of commitment that you have for things you do decides whether what you do is important or not important, that's a bad word, or maybe interesting
mm-hmm.
or not.
So would you consider the act of doing something what makes the artist, or being a conceptual artist, do you think that sitting there thinking you're being an artist, or is it the act that makes it the person an artist?
Sitting and thinking, that's something I kind of overlooked. Maybe I should rephrase that, because sitting and thinking is...
I was just trying to get a sense of the relationship between the thought and the action,
yes.
Like you were discussing.
I think thinking is more like about potential. Of course, thinking is important, but also I think it's equally important as not thinking. When I find myself thinking too much, I get frustrated, and all the ideas that I have are overdone,
mm-hmm.
Pretentious. And what I find refreshing is when I get finally tired of thinking. At the end of the day, I just do something really unexpected and crazy, like sticking a hairnet to a painting. It's sort of the thing that I do after hours, and those moments are very important for me to break from the circle of obsessive thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was never really attached to the idea of sitting all day with the sketchbook and just drawing those doodles and
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out the next project. The time of thinking, even though maybe it's hard to say whether it results in those refreshing ideas that I have later or not, but the time I spend on thinking maybe sort of stimulates the brain and makes things happen,
mm-hmm.
but not directly. I actually never had an idea that resulted from the train of thoughts that I had thinking on a specific project.
So looking at the recent show that you had in 2010, towards the end of 2010, right, there's a lot of different works in that show, and from what it looked like in the documentation, it was like a very large, expansive gallery space that had many small, little projects done by you throughout it, And there's many different ones. One thing that I saw noticed recurred a lot was the use of the pencil as an object or a subject. And there were some other kind of imagery on the wall sometimes, and some other sculptural objects. And can you kind of take us through like how you decided to include all of these elements into the show and what role they play in conjunction with each other?
Okay. So the show in 2010 was... It took place in Warsaw, in Ujazdowski Castle. The
it was in a castle.
Of contemporary art. It's a 18th century castle. It was some sort of... I think the king has had some wine cellars there. And some kind of, it was like a party house.
Nice.
And then
king's
it was owned by
house.
Some noble people. So it's a building with a lot of history. And they recently opened the cellars of the building for shows, and the curator from there, Eva Gorzondek, decided to show my work down there in the cellar. But it's pretty spacious cellar, and it's very, very nice. Pretty difficult space to work with. There's a lot of different corners and hidden little rooms. Together we worked on a selection that would work the best, and she looked through my work, ranging, I think it was 10 years of work.
So you just had a large collection that she selected?
It was a very careful selection of the works that she found most interesting within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course... I also had it was sort of like a collaboration. I had some works that I wanted to have included. She was less crazy about, and then she wanted to include works that I never thought about showing, which was quite interesting for
what
me. And actually, I'm glad that
that
they were shown.
What were some of those objects that she picked that you wouldn't...
For example,
mention?
The pencil pieces that you mentioned, some of them I didn't want to show, really. I was kind of done with them.
Mm.
And many of the old works, I just sort of want to keep them in the past and go back to them. And
of the pencil works, I remember there were some where you'd kind of like twisted the eraser ends... And there was another one that was kind of like a grid layout of halves of segments of pencils.
Yes.
What specific ones?
Those pencils
did you...
were. I played with pencils in 2004. And I just. Using a pencil as a material was the most immediate way of using material for art. And. And also, it's again, it's inexpensive.
Yeah.
You have a pencil. Pretty much, you are living with the pencil constantly when you work on ideas, you sketch. And I use this number two pencils, the yellow ones.
Yeah.
I really like the color. Too.
Iconic pencil.
And I saw things looking at the pencils. I just sort of almost accidentally saw things. So, for example, in the eraser. I never know how the ideas happen. It's sort of accidentally almost, and then I end up cutting the end of the eraser and bending them to form something that looks like a missile or or a bomb. And then once I started thinking about pencils, I just wanted to use as much of that pencil as possible. So. I made a spider out of a bunch of pencils using the geometrical dimensions of the pencil. I cut one edge off and the pencil created a structure, a shape that resembles a building. So I created a little complex of buildings in rows. You might be able to see. That looks kind of like a concentration camp.
My initial response was it looks kind of like a Space Invaders video game or something, but
yes.
Concentration camp is.
Or it could be just
also
like a military complex. Yeah, I want to avoid the Holocaust references.
Mm.
It's too easy. It's just sort of. If you want to really turn some heads, many artists they want to turn heads, and so they have to be Hitler, and they have to be has to be Holocaust and swastikas, and of course it will turn heads because it's sort of very powerful. And even though it's very powerful imagery and very tempting to use in art, because every artist really wants to use wants to capitalize on powerful imagery and I have to be careful. I know that for me I have to be careful about doing shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for me it has to take more than just using elements
mm-hmm.
to end up with a successful piece of art or with being kind of pleased with what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I generally
you wouldn't want to use that subject without having something to actually say about it. Is that what you're kind of getting at?
There are certain works that I would excuse. Like there's certain works that use this powerful imagery that actually work. But
mm-hmm.
I think when you see it, you know. When you see a work, you know whether the artist used certain elements honestly or just sort of quickly and
mm-hmm.
too much thinking or working. So even talking about this, because this is a selection of pretty old pieces. I think that most of the newest ones are the structure made out of the houses. Right now, of course, I come back to to painting, which is something I always wanted to do. But now it's very for me it's very nice because. I don't need a venue to create something. Painting is very immediate,
mm-hmm.
And I also I'm getting away from the work of art as an essay, like sort of making art about an issue, like many of those works that I did here sort of relate to an issue. This is about separation of church and state,
mm-hmm.
or. In death.
Yeah, I noticed you had several pieces about graveyards. There was one where you constructed a cemetery on the back of a sponge, so it's kind of like a model
yes, that's
graveyard in a way, and then you just showed a different model.
Yes, this is this sponge
mm-hmm.
graveyard.
What is the draw of the graveyard as a subject for you?
It was another period in my life that I went through. And
I noticed you have a American flag in there too. It kind of resembles like a military cemetery. Is that what it is?
This is I think it was the beginning of the campaign in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I think the works of art that I end up with is just a residue of what I see every day, and if you
mm-hmm.
see every day on TV, you would see the cemeteries, and I think.
So is that kind of how you came up with the idea of putting it on a sponge? Is just that's kind of what's in your head, and then when you see the back of that sponge, you
yeah,
see grass like and then gravestones.
So the idea came from different directions, and sort of met in the middle. First, I looked at the sponge. I contemplated this sponge.
Mm-hmm.
It was partially used, so it had some organic material decaying in it,
mm-hmm.
And of course the organic material decaying brought one thing to mind,
mm-hmm.
that everything is going to end up like that, including humans, and
mm-hmm.
So The next thing was, of course, the surface of the sponge looked a lot like a grass.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing, one thing led to another, and I carved those little white tombstones and little flag. And then there it was. And
mm-hmm.
then I really don't know what kind of resonance the piece will have at the end. And sometimes I think that I'm just going to either throw it away or put it in the drawer.
Mm.
And then, in perspective, some pieces make it, some don't. It's sort of like a version of Darwinian evolution theory, where only the most successful ideas make it, some don't.
Mm-hmm. So with the piece like the doghouse stack there, that's a much larger, like, refined construction, I would say. Is that something that would have originated as one of these small kind of tinkerings that you just expanded upon as you continued dwelling on it?
No, the creating the structures is kind of another branch of my interests. I found myself interested in architecture a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching drawing and watercolor in architectural college here in Boston for a while. I did another work where, in a similar way, I create some kind of pattern or structure, which was the structure made of many umbrellas. I did that in Krakow's Schindler's factory, which now is being transformed into an art center.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 100 umbrellas.
Are they arranged as with the tops forming a wall, or are they forming a dome?
They're just lying flat on the floor.
Okay.
But I found it interesting that the umbrellas that you usually use have, I think they have 7 wires. These have 6 wires, so they can perfectly create a structure imitating a beehive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not beehive. What do you call it? Bee.
Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, or maybe not, the pencil also has 6 sides.
Yes.
Like you were saying. So
yes, I did have that
other
connection.
Hexagonal structure.
Yes. So just sort of playing with shapes that allow me to build structures that can extend endlessly. For example, the doghouses, the structure that I built here can be as big as I want it to be, so it can be really large.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like a minimalistic version of it.
So I guess really the common thread that's kind of running through all the work that was in this show is called When It Thunders, It Thunders, right? Is
mm-hmm.
just kind of playfully contemplating with different objects and coming up with different results from meditating on themselves,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like looking at a doghouse and using it to create something
mm-hmm.
different and larger than the doghouse, or also with the pencil, you're constructing different things out of these materials that aren't necessarily intuitive, but if you think about it long enough, these things emerge out of them.
Mm.
Is that accurate or inaccurate?
I'm not sure. Because when I look at the pencil work and this there's about 2 years of difference between them. So when I worked on the doghouses, I almost forgot about the pencils, even though you can see the connection. Maybe it's something that is still dreaming somewhere in my mind that creates those connections. But if there is a connection, maybe it's not directly, it's not very deliberate.
I wasn't suggesting that it was like intentional, but that's... Is that what we're seeing happen in a lot of your the method of creating a lot of these, I suppose, is just meditating on a kind of everyday object and finding something new in it.
Mm. Okay, when I'm between projects, it's probably the most tense tense time that I will ever going to have. I'm going to, most tense period of time for me, because I don't know what the next project will be, and I don't know if there will be a next project.
Mm-hmm.
Very often it feels like maybe that's it. Maybe.
So you could stop being an artist today.
So it's just like every time I finish a project and take a break from it, it feels like standing on the edge of a cliff again, and there's really nothing in front of me yet.
That is intense.
Until, and I know that I have to make a jump, because if I don't, I turn back, or no, I can't turn back.
Mm.
So I make a jump and I can fall down, or
mm.
it could be an invisible cliff somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
Or another piece of land that waits for me, but I don't see it. Maybe it's foggy. So, and then I make this desperate jump, and then maybe I hold on to the next piece of land. This analogy is getting interesting. Maybe I catch like a little tip of a root and
yeah.
hold on to it, and then I'm pretty happy that I actually find myself working on the next project.
Mm-hmm.
And if I find a connection between previous project and the project I work on, it's okay. I enjoy it, but I'm not sure if I'm able to work on constant developing of a certain motif or an idea.
Mm-hmm.
For example, exploring the idea of a triangle and just expanding on that, and the idea of a triangle for about 30 years. Every idea about the triangle is of course more advanced and better.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I think I would die of boredom.
Yeah, gotta change your subject.
And one of the things that one of my favorite artists, Martin Creed, said
mm-hmm.
in his his interview that I don't know what I'm doing, that's why I'm doing as much as I can. And as every piece I'm doing is as different as possible from other pieces, so that maybe this is the thing that is the bullseye. But I don't want it to be a bullseye, because if it was, then I would be done. Then
mm-hmm.
if I did that piece that was my black square moment, that would be it. I would sign off, and then I would work in sales or somewhere else. So I'm really glad that every project doesn't really resolve much, and keeps me still a little hungry for next things, and
mm-hmm.
Still not very satisfied with the previous project.
Mm-hmm.
Being not satisfied with, I am very satisfied with many projects, especially with something that I currently just finished.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with those pieces that at this time work out for me, but it wears out quickly.
Yeah.
and then I start to think that there was something missing, and then I have to try again.
Mm-hmm.
From different perspectives. So
you just want to kind of sustain a constant process of discovery through what you do,
and maybe try different material or even different venue. If my previous project was painting, then maybe my next one will be video or
mm-hmm.
some kind of less material piece, like standing in a graveyard.
videos I saw, there was one of you standing in a graveyard, which again uses the graveyard motif, and there was another one that had many short clips of headstones that looked like static. It was called White Noise.
Oh yes, that was kind of like an animation project. Where on this one here, where I was visiting many graveyards with the camera and was photographing the surfaces of the granite, mostly granite graves, because I look at the granite and all I see is the white noise, like frozen in time,
speckles
of white noise screen. And the visual stimuli that I had from that created led to that idea. This one was also sort of started with an obsession of combining the stone of a grave, like a cold stone of the grave, with something more lifelike, for example, ice cream or ice cream cake. Or so I imagine, like putting an ice cream cake on the surface of the grave. Of course, it's horrible. I wouldn't do that right now. I was young back then, and stupid. But maybe that was an asset. So then I thought maybe I could just hold that cake. Some of this was, of course, I wouldn't be able to. I was too timid to go to the graveyard and mess up someone's grave. It's really not a good idea.
Yeah.
But I think it would be more subtle if I went to a graveyard that is kind of this one was the very historical, very, very old graveyard in Amherst, Massachusetts, where I thought it was just a perfect spot for creating a sort of situation there, where you see a guy dressed up as a waiter holding a platter with, I think there was a cake, like a cream cake on this plate there.
How long did you stand out in the graveyard like that?
I think I managed to do about 40 minutes. It felt very intense. And the people showing up, I think you can see them.
Yeah, there's a person in the background.
People didn't really pay attention to me.
Okay.
And of course, it was my first year in the US, and I didn't know how it would be received. I don't know if I was going to be arrested or.
I probably thought you were doing some bizarre mourning process.
Yes. And one thing that saved me was that I actually set up a camera on a tripod, so it did look like someone is just doing something important. The camera is the legitimacy of my project, because if there was just someone standing there as a waiter, I think that would be a problem. But my performance teacher said that maybe I should have been standing there for about 12 hours without a camera or anything. That would be much more powerful and a stronger experience for me. But I'm over it now.
Yeah.
Death ran its course.
Yeah, not afraid of death anymore.
Yes.
There was one project I was very curious about. It was drill paintings, 1968 or something.
Oh, yes.
What was that? I couldn't quite make heads or tails of it online. Like, I assume that was you playing a character of this bizarre artist supposedly taking place in 1968. Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Okay.
That was